today, how Scotland's pandemic election could pave the way for another independence referendum. Next Thursday, voters in Scotland will go to the polls to decide who they want to represent them in the Scottish Parliament.
Nicola Sturgeon has said that this is the most important election in Scottish history.
The independence case is a powerful one. More and more people in Scotland are being persuaded by it. And I believe passionately that it is one with the power to unite.
For the past few weeks, the Guardian Scotland correspondent Libby Brooks has been following candidates on the campaign trail.
All of the polling suggests that the SNP is going to win the most votes in the coming election. But it remains on a knife edge, really, whether they will get a majority, and whether they get that majority or not speaks to their desire to hold a second independence referendum.
An independent country where those of us who live here shape the future and work together to overcome our challenges will be good for all of us.
There's also the question of how the country finds its way through what remains of the COVID crisis and all of the unknowable consequences of this massive economic shock. Obviously, the SNP's argument is that in order to come through COVID and have the kind of recovery that Scotland wants, the only way to do that is through independence.
Who do we want to be in the driving seat of shaping Scotland's future?
From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, could next week's election be a stepping stone towards an independent Scotland? Libby, this is a huge election then in Scotland, and it's also happening in the midst, obviously, of the pandemic. You've been out and about in the past few weeks. How does it feel on the ground at the moment?
It's a really, really hard question to answer as a journalist because, yes, I've been out a wee bit, but not nearly as much as I normally would be. You know, they're not going to all the usual events and press conferences. You have to remember that in Scotland, our COVID restrictions have eased much more slowly. And in fact, it's only since this Monday that we've had non-essential shops and hospitality open. I was up in the northeast of Scotland last week and I was speaking to one young woman who is, you know, very politically engaged, but she was really sort of talking about this lack of buzz and the fact that at the moment really the only politics that they're talking about is the roadmap out of lockdown.
What we should be doing is focusing on making people's lives better, not dividing our community.
That's your view and you're entitled to it, but the future...
We did see a national TV debate between the candidates, but how else are they finding ways to reach voters on the campaign trail at the moment?
Speaking to candidates, I think they are finding it very difficult at the moment. You know, doorstep canvassing is now permitted under our restrictions, but most of the candidates I speak to aren't really keen to do that. So really it is just leafleting that's going on and phone banking and social media messaging too.
There are concerns about turnout, which without a pandemic are sort of usually just over 50%. And that means that really small swings could have a big impact. And so whilst you've got that headline, of course, of the SNP winning, you know, that is predictable. Actually, it's really hard to call the final makeup of the parliament.
Just before we talk about who is standing at this election, Libby, we should say that the voting system in Scotland is different from England's. Can you explain how it works and what difference it makes?
So the electoral system is made up of a first-past-the-post constituency system and then a more proportional regional list system, which makes it very hard to win a sort of full majority in Holyrood.
But despite that, one party has dominated now in Scotland for over a decade, the SNP. What has been the secret to their success, do you think, over time?
So the SNP has really successfully captured the progressive vote in Scotland with centre-left policies that go well beyond independence. They've been highly disciplined, highly strategic, media-savvy party led by
over the years, two very impressive, though very different, political operators. And that's really intensified after the 2014 referendum, because the SNP is the party of independence. Yes, they're the Scottish Greens, but it means that in electoral terms, Scotland is currently completely polarised on that issue. And so the pro-independence side in an election is unified, whereas the unionist vote is split between Tories, Labour and Liberal Democrats.
Let's talk about some of those other parties who are the SNP's main challengers at this election. What are they saying on independence in this campaign?
So at the heart of the Scottish Conservatives election strategy led by Douglas Ross is opposition to independence.
Of the vaccine. So I think people here in Scotland can see how important it's been during the most difficult year that we've all lived through, that we've been part of a strong United Kingdom.
Scottish Labour are also saying no to a second independence referendum, but their new leader, Anna Sarwar, is arguing that we should be talking about COVID recovery rather than the constitution at all.
And I think coming through the collective trauma of COVID, where we've been separated from our families and our loved ones, but we've actually come together like a country like never before, the idea that we come through this and go straight into a divisive referendum campaign, I just don't think is the right thing.
There's also a new party in town this year, isn't there, Libby, called ALBA. Can you tell me a bit more about them?
So the former First Minister, Alex Salmond, launched his new party just as the election campaign was beginning. It's called ALBA, that's the Scottish Gaelic word for Scotland, but most people are calling it ALBA, and it seem to upend everything.
Scotland's former First Minister, Alex Salmond, has re-entered frontline politics this afternoon, announcing that he's to become the leader of the new pro-independence ALBA party.
That first ALBA launch was plagued with technical mishaps, and I have to say that that has sort of characterised a lot of their online presence since.
On the final day of battle between the forces of freedom, vastly outnumbered by those of the oppressor, in the year of our Lord 1314.
There was a particularly notable advert that they released that seemed to be suggesting that Robert the Bruce would have voted for ALBA had he been alive and signed up for a postal vote.
Was there. I am the Bruce. And here and now, people power will prevail again. ALBA.
You spoke to us recently on the podcast about the huge rift that has emerged between Alex Salmond and Nicola Sturgeon after he was accused of sexual harassment at Holyrood, and the subsequent investigation into how those allegations were handled by the SNP. Do you think all of that is behind the creation of this new party?
It was a very sort of bizarre moment to be at that launch and hear him talking about how this new political force that he was creating was going to be entirely complementary to the SNP, when a week before I had been reporting on him accusing the Scottish government of failing and suggesting that senior members of the SNP were involved in a conspiracy to ruin his reputation and even put him in prison. The 180 degree turn from that was sort of quite something to behold.
Today ALBA are hoisting a flag in the wind, planting our saltire on a hill. In the next few weeks, we'll see how many will rally to our standard.
They are only standing candidates on the regional list. And Salmond's argument is that SNP votes are wasted on the regional list because the SNP does so well in the constituency ballot that it gets very few list seats. And so his argument is that to have a different pro-independence party would then help to build this, as he describes it, supermajority in favour of independence in Holyrood.
Now, if ALBA wins regional list seats, the number of independents supporting MSPs in the Parliament could reach 90 or even more. The initiative for independence should then be led by the Parliament, uniting the parties. Boris Johnson has already said no to the SNP proposals. He will find it much more difficult to say no to a Parliament and a country.
at the time that ALBA was launched, Nicola Sturgeon suggested quite bluntly that this was an act of revenge. I think listeners can probably make their own minds up about that.
I don't have much time these days for the who's up, who's down approach to politics. And I definitely have much less patience for those who treat politics like a game and for indulging anyone who puts self-interest ahead of the country's best interests.
Let's not forget that Salmond was also questioned at that launch and has been numerous times since about his treatment of female staff. He always sidesteps that question, says that he's been cleared in court, which of course he was. He was cleared of 14 charges of sexual assault. But he doesn't actually address the other inappropriate behaviour, which is on record and some of which he has admitted to.
How has the ALBA party gone down with voters, Libby?
It's hard to tell, not being out and about, but when I was up in the northeast last week, where Alex Salmond held his constituencies both for Holyrood and Westminster over the last three decades, and I was really surprised by how few people even mentioned ALBA to me without prompting. When I did ask people about it, I think most folk were pretty dubious about it, certainly dubious about him.
But listen, the electorate will judge in 3 weeks' time. All I can tell you is I'm enjoying myself enormously.
Okay. At the moment, polling is suggesting they could get between sort of zero and then six MSPs. And let's not forget that there already is a pro-independence majority in Holyrood. It's the SNP plus the Scottish Greens. And in the polling that we've seen, it's not ALBA, but it's the Scottish Greens who are proving most successful at picking up SNP support on the regional list.
Is this election, Libby, all about independence, or do you think there is more at play here at the moment?
I think there should be a lot more at play here. The SNP do have difficult questions to answer, especially, for example, their record on education, on drug deaths. It's been in power for 14 years. It does need to be held to account. We are also talking about how to manage our recovery from the COVID crisis.
Nicola, the last time the independents consumed this country, you took your eye off the ball on one of the most important issues, and that is drug deaths in Scotland. And your Justice Secretary at the time admitted you did not deal with the issue because it would get in the way, in the way of independence.
There have been stalwart efforts up here to talk about the nitty-gritty of those policies rather than the sort of big picture constitutional questions. It is really difficult to do when things always seem to come back to the constitution.
Let's talk about the pandemic, Libby, and coronavirus in Scotland. Before we get into how that's affecting things at this election, looking back at the past year, health is a devolved issue in Scotland, so they could approach it differently from in England. How did the government go about this?
The story of the SNP government's handling of the pandemic has really been one, first, of more caution than we've seen from the Westminster government, and secondly, much better communication. Sturgeon has been so visible doing these daily briefings, also having particular moments in her broadcasts when she's addressing children directly or talking about her own distress at not being able to hug her mother.
Obviously, like most people, I'm trying to keep in touch with my family over FaceTime and Skype, whereas previously we'd just have phoned each other because we could go and see each other.
So it's been said often that nobody speaks human like Nicola Sturgeon does.
But, you know, give my mum and dad a hug and hug my niece, go and wish my nephew a proper happy birthday. All of these things I, just like everybody else, I really look forward to doing. You're going to make me emotional now.
Has this approach by Nicola Sturgeon and the SNP worked in public health terms? And also, has it worked politically?
Certainly in public health terms, we have had a much more cautious approach, both to locking down and then to opening up again. There have been, you know, serious mistakes made.
The COVID death number in Scotland, in care home overall and in care homes, is too high. We didn't get everything right. We were faced with a situation just over a year ago where we had to act fast. We didn't have all the knowledge we have now.
The Scottish Government discharged untested elderly patients from hospitals into care homes in the early weeks of the pandemic, which led to Scotland having the highest rate of care home deaths. That's something that is going to be dealt with by a public inquiry.
We are £1 million worse off this time this year than what we were this time last year. That's what we've had to borrow to keep the business afloat.
There's also been, I think, a lot of business anger around the slowness of reopening, particularly this time around.
We need help, and we need help now.
That said, it has been very difficult for opposition parties to land any blows on her. You just need to look at her approval ratings, even amongst non-SNP voters. It is widely held that she has handled and governed the country very well through the pandemic.
The Scottish Government has not got everything right, far from it. But I doubt there are many people in Scotland who would have wanted Westminster to be more in charge of our pandemic response. In the depth of crisis, we have looked to and trusted our own government and parliament to steer us through.
How is Nicola Sturgeon building the pandemic into her argument for an independent Scotland, Libby?
Well, her argument now is that in order for Scotland to have the kind of recovery from COVID that it wants to have, the Scottish Government needs to have all the powers at its disposal. One of the concerns that she raised was that Boris Johnson, Rishi Sunak, would end up using COVID recovery as an excuse for further austerity. That's not something that she wants to see imposed in Scotland, and she wants to have a more equal recovery, and that's only possible through independence.
Independence is not a distraction from the task of post-COVID reconstruction. It is essential to getting that right.
Is there a unionist argument being made against independence based on the success of the vaccine rollout, which obviously has been happening across the country and that Scotland has been a part of? You know, that's quite a good argument for Scotland staying part of the union, isn't it?
You would think so, and certainly some analysts do believe that the dip that we've seen in support for independence recently has to do with the vaccine, with that showing the strength of the union. Others, though, think it's actually more to do with people's fatigue at the current restrictions, or the restrictions that have just lifted, and maybe a slight loss of faith in that more cautious approach. So I wonder if that sort of pushback could be more to do with that.
Libby, it seems very likely that the SNP will win again next week. You interviewed Nicola Sturgeon on the campaign trail recently. How did she come across to you?
I have to say it was quite a bizarre experience meeting her face to face on the campaign trail. I mean, I guess one is so used on election campaign trails to be sort of pushing past admirers, and particularly folk trying to get selfies with Nicola Sturgeon. It was very weird to be at this deserted wind farm near Glasgow with her, with sort of very few other people in sight, apart from, you know, some socially distanced photographers. But that is the campaign that we are in at the moment. I was surprised she didn't seem more tired. She was more buoyant than I had expected, I think. As per usual, she gives very little away, but talks a great game.
You've spoken to Sturgeon many times over the years. Interviewing her now, how confident do you think she is that she can secure another referendum?
Well, certainly what she says is that she is absolutely certain that the Westminster government cannot continue to ignore democracy, and that if this majority is delivered next week, then Boris Johnson will have no option but to say yes to a second referendum. I guess the question is at what time she would like to see a referendum. Nicola Sturgeon has always been absolutely clear that she wants to see a sustained majority in favour of independence before holding another referendum. She wants another referendum when she can win it. And it is still the case that the polling, I mean, obviously it has shifted in the last year, and there have been a number of very positive polls for the yes side, but it's still on a knife edge, you know, around 50-50. That must be a consideration for her in terms of timing as well.
Coming up, even if the SNP win a majority, will the UK government be a roadblock to their plans for independence? Libby, you say that Nicola Sturgeon is clear with voters that she'll push to have this referendum in the first half of the next parliament, as long as the COVID crisis has passed. But she can only do that if the British government allows it. How likely is it that will happen?
It is certainly the case that Boris Johnson himself is adamant he doesn't want to be the Prime Minister who permits a referendum.
A massive programme to get our country rebuilt and restarted again. And I think that is what people would like to focus on.
That remains a gift to the SNP, because Boris Johnson's popularity ratings up here are so catastrophically low. In fact, the only politician with lower ratings than Johnson is one, Alex Salmond.
All they want to do is break up Britain with another referendum. And I think that is the last thing this country needs at the moment.
We know that Westminster is very concerned about this. There has been some briefing from Downing Street that they are at least game planning offering a second referendum immediately to call the SNP's bluff, hoping that people are more likely to vote for the status quo whilst they're still dealing with the chaos of the pandemic. That would, of course, be a huge gamble, and sources up here insist there won't be any softening. The Scottish Government has said that if Johnson continues to say no, then they would seek to progress legislation for a legal referendum at Holyrood, and then Johnson, I guess, would be forced to challenge that in the courts. And there's still the question of when, because Nicola Sturgeon has said it's only once the COVID crisis has passed, and that is very vague and usefully vague for her if support for independence continues to dip.
In a week's time, Libby, we hope to know the result of this, although we might not do for a couple of days. But the SNP are pretty certain to get the most votes in this election. But from your conversations with people, what do you think they actually want? You know, are voters viewing this as a stepping stone to independence, or is this more about things like the economy and the pandemic?
The country is completely polarised. You see it in the Lord Ashcroft polling that we had this Wednesday. Nearly as many people say that they're going to use their votes next week to prevent a new referendum as to try and secure one. And it's worth remembering that even amongst people who are pro-independence, there are these gradations in terms of when they'd like to see that referendum. You know, a third in the next couple of years, a third 5 to 10 years. And voters that I was out speaking to in Glasgow and Rutherglen this week say they weren't wanting to see a referendum immediately. They were more concerned about the effects of the pandemic, climate change, schools and health. I was speaking to one Holyrood candidate this week. He was reflecting on what an odd election this is, where the issues are, you know, so massively important, and yet there is this strange sense of disengagement. It's quite slippery, really. We don't entirely know what folk are thinking. And he was saying, you know, actually, this goes beyond the election because of these enormous questions. Actually, the most interesting politics is going to happen after May the 6th.
Libby, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel.
That was Libby Brooks. Read all her coverage of the Scottish elections at theguardian.com, where next Thursday evening you can follow the Politics Live blog, which will bring you the results from the elections in Scotland and Wales and the local elections taking place across England. Before we go, you may remember that last year we made an episode with Guardian human rights journalist Annie Kelly about the sexual abuse happening in garment factories in Lesotho. This week, She won an Amnesty Media Award for her long read on the story. It's an incredible piece of reporting called Fashion's Dirty Secret: How Sexual Assault Took Hold in Jeans Factories. You can find that and our podcast at the website. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Sammy Kent and sound design is by Ian Chambers. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. I hope you have a great weekend and we'll be back with you on Monday.